Brexit looks like it's getting further and further away.
Is it going to
be bad for British rock music?
No, I'm doing the rock business. What's it got to do with rock business?
Have they
a tour in Europe? Oh dear, as if we didn't tour in Europe before the f***ing EU. Oh, give it up.
On that note.
Give it up.
Thank you very much, Betty. That's great. We're going to.
If you want to sign up to be ruled by a f***ing mafia, you do it.
Just a quick one.
Like being governed by FIFA.
Have provided a couple of...
Michael Malice here with a case of the Mondays and a case of Nightshade for you to Monday as a verb to. Our top story today, following up on what I was covering yesterday with the SPLC when they fired the co-founder of Morse D's and scrubbed him from their website, as you might remember. Gavin's attorney, Ron Coleman, was on my show, You're Welcome, last week. The episode's on YouTube right now, and we'll be covering that lawsuit as it proceeds. Now we have some more news about what was behind his firing for unspecified conduct, which happened on Wednesday. To remind you all, he had spearheaded the fundraising that had built up a war chest of over $500 million, and a portion of which is held offshore. Now, and according to the Montgomery Advertiser, the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, announced they were bringing in an external firm to audit the nonprofit's workplace practices. However, a series of articles in that same newspaper in the 90s detailed an environment at the center in which black employees felt discriminated against. Now, that had fueled speculation that discriminatory behavior might have led to his ouster, which I was skeptical about because they wouldn't be this Stalinist and that they're pretending he never existed, and he surely would have come forward and denied it, and there would have been a back and forth. It wouldn't have been this clean of an exit. In that same series, the Advertiser published photos of the inside of his so-called poverty palace, which is a villa with Italian roof tiles and a half indoor, half outdoor pool. That sounds really cool. Ugh, let's put this collar. The allegations in his divorce case, however, have floated around for years, part of a brief filed by his ex-wife Maureen, in which, here's the big one. Remember, we were speculating it's got to be something big? Dees had been accused of molesting his stepdaughter. The filing also alleged that he refused to give up his mistress, who he got pregnant, before allegedly paying for her abortion, and that he attempted to catch his ex-wife in some sort of cuckold sting. Anyway, after they had agreed to see other people, Dee supposedly showed up with a Montgomery private detective during one of her liaisons with another man in Washington, D.C. And at the conclusion of the 1980 divorce proceedings, this was a long time ago, people, the judge said, "We are of the opinion that to relate the conduct each party accused the other of would be detrimental to the best interests of the parties and in particular to their children." Now, some websites opted to surface the claims regardless. Now, Josh Moon, who's an Alabama reporter, says the allegations involve some kind of sexual misconduct. As he put it, quote, "The SPLC fired Robert Dees and announced it. Multiple sources have told me that the allegations of inappropriate conduct involve sexual harassment incidents. Multiple incidents that have come to light after an initial recent allegation." Now, Maureen Dees, who's the ex-wife, had filed for divorce on March 8, 1979. After a decade-long marriage marred by difficulties. Now, this according to an appellate brief obtained by Big League Politics. The brief was filed by attorneys for Maureen in the Alabama Court of Civil Appeals. Now, according to court testimony, among other, as they put it, perverted sexual behavior, Dees attempted to molest his 18-year-old stepdaughter with a sex toy. Holly Buck was Maureen Dee's daughter from a previous marriage. As Maureen, as it says in this filing, Holly testified that in the September of 1977, Morris attempted to molest her in the following incident. One night, Maureen and Morris were sitting drinking wine and discussing a case Morris was trying. This according to the brief. Holly was with them. Around 11 or 12 o'clock, Maureen went to bed and Holly stayed up with Morris discussing the case. Morris kept offering Holly wine, some of which she accepted. So he's getting his stepdaughter drunk at age 18. Holly testified that she declined, choosing to go to bed instead. The document says she went to her room and then went to the bathroom. Looking out the window, she saw Morris in the bushes beside the bathroom window looking in. She said, "Morris, is that you?" He said nothing and ran away. 2 months later, supposedly, things got worse. Morris entered Holly's room through the bathroom, according to the document. He was in his underwear, and he sat on the bed where Holly was lying on her stomach, facing away from the door. He touched her on the back and woke her up. He told her that he had brought her a present, and he presented her with a vibrator. He plugged it in and said he had brought it back to her. He proceeded to rub it in her back and said, "Let me show you how to use it." In his defense, he probably saw those ads that they used to have for women to relieve tension where they would sell vibrators to housewives and be like, "Oh, yeah, it's a stress massager."
It relieves hysteria, right?
Yeah, right.
He's just trying to help her out.
Yeah, but the doctor's got to finger you until your crazy goes away. According to Holly's testimony, she declined, but Morris proceeded anyway. Again, this is the stepdaughter testifying, not the mom, the ex-wife. He started to place it between her legs when she raised her voice and said no loudly. This is according to the brief. He was wearing only a pair of bikini underwear shorts during the incident, and about 2 hours later, she'd fallen back asleep. He came back in. He brought the vibrator with him, plugged it in, and said again, "Let me show you how to use it." He tried to show her again by putting it between her legs, but she raised her voice again, and he stopped. He took it and left. So if this is what his, and again, this is an allegation. This is from a very long time ago. Doesn't mean anything regarding what he was doing necessarily in 2019 or 2018 or 2017. But there's a lot of dirt around this guy. And these small towns, these small rural states, people talk and people gossip. So I have no idea what the real situation is. But this is something that's been making the rounds online. People have been alluding to it. So I thought it would be of interest to inform you all. Now, in other news, following up on something else from last week, it's been a year since the music links on MySpace have stopped working, as I'm sure you all noticed, being MySpace aficionados. At first, the company insisted they were working on it, but now they've admitted that all those files are lost. This is according to Boing Boing. As a result of a server migration project, any photos, videos, and audio files you uploaded more than 3 years ago may no longer be available on or from MySpace. Look at this, the nerve. "We apologize for the inconvenience." Oops, I deleted everything. And here's the best part. "And suggest that you retain your backup copies." So you're like, at one point, like the biggest website ever, and you don't have the fucking tech knowledge to back shit up? But you're telling the users to back it up. I don't even know who uses MySpace anymore. Anyway,
I was going to say the three users that are left are pissed.
Is it for boomers now or is it for like eight-year-olds? I don't even know. If you'd like more information, please contact our data protection officer. And yeah, they don't have a backup. So whoever's MySpace is out there, I had a MySpace. I had it in 2009. And what I would do is I would add all the Matt Hughes people. So, and I made him put me in his top 8 friends. So that was kind of fun. It's probably still there, or maybe it's not, thanks to this. So, man, and guys, take a second, back up your Facebook stuff. You can have Facebook email you an archive, back up your Google Gmail, and back up your Twitter. It'll be good to have those somewhere saved in case they decide to boot you off the site or if you want to delete the site yourself. Each of those websites has a button you can press that'll give you all your information. So that's kind of funny that MySpace, the only way MySpace makes news is if they lose things that you didn't even know you had. Now, we got another issue dealing with the press. Now, Reuters reporter Joseph Menn exclusively revealed on Friday that Democratic presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke belonged to one of the best-known groups of computer hackers when he was a teenager. Now, within minutes, this special report was the most popular story on Reuters.com and was picked up by other news outlets. But the origin of the story goes back more than 2 years. Members of the group, which calls itself Cult of the Dead Cow, protected O'Rourke's secret for decades. And they were reluctant to compromise the former Texas congressman's political career. After more than a year of reporting, men persuaded O'Rourke to talk on the record in an interview in late 2017. O'Rourke acknowledged that he was a member of the group on the understanding that the information would not be made public until after his Senate race against Ted Cruz in November 2018. Now, in an interview with Reuters senior producer Jane Lee, Men explains how he broke the story and got O'Rourke to open up about his hacking days. He goes, I decided to write a book about the Cult of the Dead Cow because they were the most interesting and influential hacking group in history. Maybe the CIA. They illustrate a lot of things that I think are fascinating about hacking and security work. While I was looking into the cult, I found out that they had a member who was sitting in Congress. I didn't know which one, but I knew that they had a member of Congress. And then I figured out which one it was. And the members of the group wouldn't talk to me about who it was. They wouldn't confirm that it was this person unless I promised that I wouldn't write about it until after the November election. That's because the member of Congress had decided to run for Senate. Beto O'Rourke is who it was. I met Beto O'Rourke. I said, I'm writing a book about the Cult of Dead Cow. I think it's really interesting. I know you're in this group. This book is going to be published after November and your Senate race is over. And he said, okay. And he told me about his time in the Cult of Dead Cow. So as we see from this story, the press doesn't like to speculate and put out rumors. They will only put out things that they can verify with the person, which happens across both political parties and happens consistently and objectively. I mean, Brian Stelter ran to this guy's defense. He goes, this kind of thing happens all the time. A reporter will have information about a politician, and then because he's writing a book, he'll keep it quiet till after the election. No. Yeah, it happens all the time. That doesn't make it right. That's the problem, that it happens all the time. Your job as a journalist, ostensibly, is to provide information to the public, information that might be germane to them making a decision who to vote for. Something like, we have strong evidence to conclude that Beto O'Rourke used to be a computer hacker, might be of interest to the general public, but no. He's saving it for his book and protecting his boy. So this and Brian Stelter got ratioed really hard on Twitter for this, and understandably so, and accurately so. And speaking of horrible people and Brian Stelter, Dan Rather, who is really one of a real dinosaur at this point, he was on Brian's show, and he had a few things to say about this whole situation of President Trump. Let's take a look at this video.
White supremacist terror attack from a man who apparently lived online. The suspect has this awful digital history.
Wait, pause this.
But if the president and his aides
don't... Pause this. Brian tweets every 5 minutes. This idea that, like, the New Zealand shooter is what he's referring to. This idea that, like, oh, you know, it used to be... Here's how it works. It used to be, in the 80s, you play Dungeons & Dragons, you spend all your time in this fantasy land, you're going to become a Satanist murderer. Then the nerds spoke out, and people were like, we're nerds. We couldn't kill anyone even if we wanted to. We can't even lift a pen. And like, okay, that's some bullshit. Then it became, we have to stop bullying. Remember? Remember those anti-bullying campaigns? We're all sick of it. Bullying's bad. We got to stop bullying people. And then the people who get bullied, the nerds, Gamergate happened. And they're like, fuck you. We hate you and your views. And now it's like, oh, did we say we stop bullying? What we meant is they're all pre-murderers. And that if you're against having, far left tropes in your video games, well, you're 1 second away from shooting up a school. That's just logic. And now we have to this point, like, oh, this guy uses memes. The president uses memes. Case closed. So, and it's just really transparent, and the memes got at least partly the president elected. So there is such a very concerted effort to make sure that whatever happened in 2016, that fluke, doesn't ever happen again. And they're going after every single element that they can, and understandably so. Let's play some more of this.
Don't know how the web works. Don't know how the digital age works. If they're not savvy about this, how can they effectively respond to this rising threat of extremism on the
pause
internet?
Pause it. Well, wait. Hold on.
Not very
hold
well.
Hold on. Wait. How is it why is this a rising threat? Why is it a rising threat? Like, literally, what evidence is there as a rising threat? So something extremely horrible happened. The second it happens, how can we exploit this to further our agenda? The bodies aren't even cold. It's about Trump. Rising threat of what? How? That's not how data works. If you had no attacks, Then you have one attack. Then you have question mark. It could be a spike. It could be a curve. It could be this. That's how math... What the fuck is this hockey stick thinking? This was a couple... Okay, go ahead. Play more of this.
To deal with reality, this is a whole new age. And the president has the strongest, the most powerful platform for propaganda that humans have ever had.
Pause. To sit on CNN and to attack the president for having a powerful platform for propaganda without a hint of irony. I don't know. Dan Rather's even before my time, and I'm long in the tooth. Let me remind you all. It used to be we had three networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC. Then Fox came along, not Fox News, Fox. Those three men, Cronkite, Dan Rather, Peter Jennings, those are the ones people sat around a dinner and listened to. They were trusted. The few of the names changed over to the years, of course. They were all hard left, and you had three different hard left, and then you could say, well, we have a choice. It's like saying, well, you have milk chocolate or dark chocolate or I don't even know a third kind. White chocolate's not really chocolate. And it's like, yeah, you have your choice. Well, I don't want to have chocolate. Well, tough shit, you're having chocolate. So for him to sit here and complain about propaganda because the president has a different point of view from him is really ironic. And, oh, God, he's so gross. This is the man who in 1994, after the Republicans captured Congress for the first time in 40 fucking years, 40 years, but he's not a partisan, he said the American people threw a temper tantrum tonight. And he was kicked off of CBS because he bought into bullshit about George W. Bush with this bullshit typewriter story. But see, the president, propaganda is when you propagate news that is false, knowingly false, or you haven't vetted properly. That's what got him fired. He hated Bush so much, understandably, that he bit after decades of being a journalist into the stupid story that came across his desk, and he paid the consequences for it. And he's still bitter about it. Anyway, go ahead.
Has ever had this kind of reach, the combination of television, radio, the internet, social media, Twitter.
He does love Twitter.
Pause it. Did you go back? Did he say internet, social media, and tweet? He thinks it's called tweet. This fucking
old love Twitter. That's his one tech savviness. Yeah.
Internet, social media. No president has ever had this kind of reach. The combination of television, radio, the internet, social media, tweet.
Twitter.
He corrects him. And fucking Brian Stelter and tweet. He has tweet. You know, President Obama didn't have any of those things. The fuck is he talking about? Let me also remind everyone that in the 2016 campaign, there were all these organizations that came out against Trump that had literally never endorsed a presidential candidate, ever. There was like something like the Harvard Republican Club, like National Geographic, some weird random organizations. No CEOs endorsed him. And the argument was, look, no top, everyone's against this guy. You can't really vote for him. This isn't like fun and games, like Republican, Democrat. This guy's a menace. He's a lunatic. It's ridiculous that he's even a nominee. You can't vote for him was the message from every angle possible. So now for him to be like, oh, the president has a lot of powerful propaganda. He had to fight off people who had never gotten involved in politics before. And all the articles talked about this constantly. He's got no endorsement. Look. This is how many newspapers there are. 1,500 endorse Hillary, 3 endorse Trump. Do we have to spell it out for you? And now it's like, oh, Trump has all this propaganda at his disposal. The fuck? It wasn't a problem when it's all against him. Now that he's the president and speaking his mind like every president does, this is unprecedented. What, Obama didn't fucking use Twitter? What the fuck are you talking about? Go ahead. Oh, this stupid guy. Look at this. And tweet.
He does love Twitter. That's his one tech savviness, yeah.
Well, with all respect, I don't think his age being 72 is any excuse of not keeping up. Hmm. He's basically anti-science. When you talk about being what he says about climate change and all of that, that's in a wider context of actually this administration led by the president is downgrading science. At the very time we need to be leaping forward, keeping up with science.
Yeah, pause it. Cutting... Okay. The idea that, does anyone honestly think, no matter what you think of climate change, that Dan Rather keeps up with science? Like, literally, look at this face. This guy is fucking made of tree rings. I keep up with science. What's fucking science? The only reason you keep up with science is you got to have 80 machines to keep you alive, you fucking dinosaur. So you got to keep up with which pills to take and which cancel each other out because you're a biological anomaly. Oh, he's against science. You know, in my day, I knew about science. I talked to Galileo. All right, let's finish this off.
Research and that sort of thing.
That sort of thing.
You know, with Twitter, much of the time, not all of the time, much of the time, I sense the public has a sense that they're facing a manure spreader in a windstorm. It just keeps coming, coming at you.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, but it's unrelenting. And he understands the value of that. But for the rest of us and for the public at large, it's time, you know.
Oh, God, yeah, okay. The idea that Dan Rather has a better sense of the public at large via Twitter than Trump, who uses Twitter better than anyone on Earth, is not science. Let's just put it that way, of any kind. I want to skip ahead to the Brexit story because this is a major, major news. So there was breaking news today on Brexit. Not only is there new chaos, there's new chaos coming from a direction that no one even expected. Now, the Speaker, John Bercow, threw the Brexit plans into further this is like, you know how like there's the joke on Always Sunny, how they're the different characters and Charlie's the wild card? And like wild card, like no one sees it coming. John Bercow, Speaker of the House of Commons, is just pulled a wild card today. And no one saw it coming because the Speaker in British politics is the least wild card ever. His role is to facilitate debate in the House. He is completely, even though he holds a Tory seat and is nominally Tory, he's completely nonpartisan. He doesn't get involved. He's just there to follow the rules and kind of be like a referee. And whoever's the Speaker is very well respected. It's very, very, very unusual for the Speaker to get involved in politics in any direction, like the Queen, in another way. So John Bercow threw the Brexit plans into further confusion because he ruled out another vote on Theresa May's deal unless members of Parliament are given a new motion. This was a surprise ruling. He said he wouldn't allow a third, quote, meaningful vote in the coming days on, quote, substantially the same motion as members of Parliament rejected last week. Now, this is something that we don't have a parallel for in the States, basically. If Nancy Pelosi wants us to vote over and over for the same bill, she could have that happen. And sometimes you have to vote over and over because of reconciliation between the House and the Senate. With 11 days to go, 11 days, before the UK is due to leave the EU, ministers have warned of a looming constitutional crisis. The UK is currently, to remind you all, scheduled to leave the EU by law on March 29th. Theresa May has negotiated the withdrawal deal with the EU, but it must also be agreed to by members of Parliament. They've voted against it twice, and the government had considered a third attempt to get it through Parliament. Now, Bercow sounded a convention dating back to 1604. That's before Columbus even discovered America, that a defeated motion could not be brought back in the same form during the course of a parliamentary session. This is what the Speaker's role is, to be a real stickler about the rules. He said the second vote on the Prime Minister's deal last week was in order because it was substantially different from the first, but any further votes must pass the test he had set out to be allowed. The Prime Minister's official spokesman said Mr. Bercow did not warn us of the contents of the statement or indeed the fact that he was making one, which also shows his nonpartisanship. He's not giving a heads up. Bercow made his ruling in response to what he said were concerns from members of Parliament that the government intended to bring the same deal back to the House ad infinitum and asked them to repeatedly pronounce on fundamentally the same proposition. Last week's second vote on the deal had not fallen foul of parliamentary conventions. He made this very clear. This is because the government had secured legal changes to its existing agreement with the EU, set out in three new documents, and therefore what they'd been asked to consider was different from the agreement rejected by 230 votes back in January. So we'll be keeping up what's going on with this. I mean, this is just completely out of left field, and hilarity and chaos is ensuing as we're counting down, I mean, less than 2 weeks away. This is just mishugana. And finally, President Trump had earlier attacked Joe Biden as being a low IQ individual. And the reason he did this was because of this following clip. How long is this clip?
2 minutes.
Perfect.
We need a little more of the Delaware way. We got to make it more the American way. And it's lost. Our politics become so mean, so petty, so vicious, that we can't govern ourselves. In many cases, even talk to one another. And it can't go on like this, folks. I know I get criticized. I'm told I get criticized by the new left. I have the most progressive record of anybody run.
The new left was the late 60s left. So when he's talking at his age, he's like 80. He was there. He's old enough to have been part of that new left. The whole Berkeley scene, the hippies, that was the new left. Good Lord, the new left. I guess although that's a clever shot at Bernie, calling him this filthy old dinosaur. Him and Dan Rather could get in a Volkswagen and do an on-the-road Kerouac thing. Go ahead.
Running for the if anybody who would run.
See, caught it, pass us up. I don't think that the question is that he said, as anyone who's running or as anyone who would run. Now, he fucked up once before very famously when he outed President Obama was going to come out for gay marriage, and he basically beat the president to the punch and they had to scramble in the White House. So the question is, was that on purpose? Was that him teasing? That sounded to me like a verbal slip, but I was not there. Okay, go ahead some more.
I didn't mean it.
The power of Christ compels you.
And anybody who would run.
Doesn't even make sense. I've got the most progressive credentials of anyone who would run.
Because
what?
Folks.
What?
We have to bring this country back together again. And look, I believe we're at an inflection point. I really mean it. I believe we're at an inflection
Stop
point.
Stop this. I thought Biden was going to do very well, and watching him here, I don't no longer think that. The last time I saw him actually perform would have been, 11 years ago, right, in 08, when he was running for president. And he held his own in the debates. No, I guess in 2012, when he had the debate with Paul Ryan, he did very well there as well. But this, he seems old in his cadence. He seems slow. That going toe-to-toe with Trump, that's low energy. This is not a high-energy speaker. He's not being quick with his words and catching himself. Doesn't have the gusto. And if he's on that debate stage with 9 other Democrats, he's not going to come off well at all. Certainly not even compared to Bernie. He's kind of like who would have been the equivalent of the Republicans in. It's not like Jeb, because Jeb wasn't at least old, but he's got that kind of like maybe Lindsey Graham, that like, why is this guy here? What is he bringing to the table? Jesus Christ. Okay, play some more of this. This is pathetic.
The election in 2020, without hyperbole, is going to be the most important election this country has undergone in over 100 years. Not a joke.
Stop that. Wait, hold on. More important than 1916 and 1916, when we were about to enter World War I? More important than FDR? What are you talking about? More important than 1964? Good Lord. More important than Obama, apparently, huh? Interesting. Go ahead.
There's so much at stake. Our core values are being shredded. Are standing on the world stage is at risk. I still travel the world. I still meet with head of states all over the world.
Heads of state. Head of states. Jesus fucking Christ.
They're concerned.
Head of states.
They wonder where we are.
How the fuck am I a better speaker?
Our democracy is under threat. The danger posed.
These are just fortune cookies.
By this administration to this nation is not hypothetical or exaggerated. It's real. It's existential. And many of our Republican and independent friends know it as well as we do. Look at what happened in Charlotte.
Oh, Jesus. There's nothing there. Wow, what an empty suit. He's going to get clobbered. So now I'm thinking if it's not Bernie, it's going to be someone who's coming out of the pack out of nowhere like John Kerry did in 2004. Wow, that was very sad to watch, because he used to have some heft to it. He used to have some sense of humor about himself, some blue-collar amiability. Even though he's doing the the best in the polls, that's a name recognition thing, and that's an Obama holdover thing. And as soon as all these other and as soon as you see those sniffing videos, and President Trump starts calling creepy Uncle Joe, and that's got to defend that. That, I mean, at least Hillary Clinton, I mean, she gritted her teeth and she would just, I mean, it was like a harpy. This is like a commercial for the clapper. And on that note, sweet dreams.